man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided the property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off distant country, and there was squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself to a citizen of that country. He sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything.
When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arm around him and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I have been slaving for you and never disobeyed you or shot orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, come home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But when he had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again, he was lost and is found.'"
Thank you both very much. Thank you. Cheers. Quite a marathon, huh? In the parable of the prodigal, we have people aware of what's going on. That's what we're going to focus on. But I want to put this in the context of some of the rest of Luke. So let me just play you a short video clip from the Bible Project. Oh, yes, that's me dad. So there he is, looking nice and happy because he's got such a handsome son who's, he's very pleased with his work there. Okay.
All outsiders are welcome.
Yeah, good news for the poor. That's one of Luke's main themes.
Yeah, you'll find it all over this section. The marginalized people that he heals, the shamed sex workers he reaches out to, the tax collectors he includes. This is Jesus's kingdom crew.
And Israel's religious leaders watch and start to criticize him. If he really is God's prophet, why is he welcoming sinners and eating with them?
Yeah, this section reads like the Battle of the Banquets. So Jesus throws these dinner parties as a symbol of how God's kingdom is here for the sick and the poor, people who could never pay him back.
Jesus also attends banquets with Israel's religious leaders.
Yeah, and he lays into them for becoming an arrogant, exclusive social club.
But they don't get it, and so he tells them a famous parable that goes like this.
There was a father who had two sons.
The older son is trustworthy and honors his father.
And the younger son, he's a mess. He rebels and cashes in his inheritance to travel far away and blow it all on partying and being stupid.
And then there's a famine in the land, and he runs out of money. So he has to scrape by taking care of somebody's pigs. And he's so hungry he wants to eat the pig slop, at which point it occurs to him, if I'm gonna be a farmhand, I might as well go home and work for my dad. At least I won't be eating pig food. So he treks back home, rehearsing his apology.
Now, the father is certain that his son did not survive the famine. But then, one day, he sees someone walking down the road. It's his son. He's not dead. And so the father runs to him and embraces his son, kissing him all over.
The son starts his speech. "Dad, I don't deserve to be your son. Maybe I could come and work for you.
But before he can finish, the father calls his servants to go get the nicest robe, new sandals, a fancy ring for his son. They are to prepare the best food for a banquet. It is time to celebrate.
Now later that day, the older brother arrives from a long day working in the field to discover his long-lost loser of a brother has come home. And they're celebrating?
And he gets angry. And think about it. He's been faithful to his father all of these years. He never got a party like this. And then this disgrace of a family member comes home and they're going to celebrate him? It's disgusting. He refuses to join the banquet.
So the father finds the older brother outside and he says,
"Son, you are already in our family. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate your brother because he was lost. And now he's found. He was dead, but now he's alive."
Jesus wants the religious leaders to see the outsiders the way God sees them, as sons and daughters that are being reclaimed from death.
Jesus' kingdom community was wide open to anybody. The only entry requirement is to humble yourself and recognize your need for God's mercy. And so the religious leaders' rejection of Jesus and his crew is actually a rejection of the God of Israel.
The leaders don't like all this, and so as Jesus' road trip comes to an end, the conflict is at a boiling point.
Yeah, he's going to ride towards Jerusalem for Passover as they plot to take his life.
This isn't just a cool story. A story that everybody knows. It's set in the context of the fact that the people of his time did not understand the heart of God and did not understand how to appropriately respond to the invitation that God gives. And so that's kind of what we're looking at today together. And we're going to have a fair bit of discussion in our lesson today. And if you're online, welcome to you. And I'll be coming over to have a chat with anybody online if that's helpful. Usually in this parable, it's the younger son that gets the focus. It's called the parable of the prodigal son, but you'll have noticed there's more than one son. And there are problems with not just the younger son, but also the older son. It's also been called by some people the parable of the prodigal God, in the sense that God does not treat people the way people expect him to treat people. There's a book by Timothy Keller with that title, The Prodigal God, you might find interesting. My particular favorite of all the books I've read around this parable is this one by Henry Nouwen, The Return of the Prodigal Son. And in fact, I think it's on the next slide. That's the cover. That's the cover of the book, which is the Rembrandt painting of The Return of the Prodigal, which is very powerful, and I can't do justice to it on a screen like this, but we'll talk a bit about this as we go along. But if you would like to read not a big book, not a long book, but a profound and meaningful book about the return of the prodigal, then I can definitely recommend this book. So we're going to focus on the father more than the two sons. The parable is about the sons. It is also about the father. And really, we would, to do full justice to the parable, we should look at all of them. But because it's Father's Day, we're going to focus more on the character and the heart of the father in the story and ask ourselves what we learn about that for ourselves as potentially sons to that kind of father, but also about in what way we might want to be like that father. So I have a question for you. Turn to someone and discuss this for 5 minutes and then we'll see, which is, when you think about this story we've just heard read, what do you think hurt the father about the younger son's behavior? So not so much what do you think about the younger son's behavior, the one who went off and squandered the inheritance, but what do you think hurt the father about that behavior? So it's a slightly different question than what you might think. Not about the son's behavior. What do you think hurt the father about that younger son's behavior? Does that make sense? Okay, 5 minutes, have a chat, and let's see what we come up with. Behavior. What have you discovered? Thoughts? Yeah.
He felt failure.
Failure? He could have felt like a failure as a father, right? If I'd raised him differently, maybe this wouldn't have happened. So it could be some feeling of failure. A sense of rejection. Yeah, he could have stayed, but he decided to leave. Rejection. That's very powerful, isn't it, Liesl? A lot of disrespect involved in that behavior. Does anybody know why it's particularly disrespectful in that culture to do this kind of thing?
Go on. You said, my understanding is in Jewish culture, it's the elder son who had the inheritance and the younger son wouldn't have received anything. So
or not much.
Not much. So to come forward and sort of ask for that would have been, I suppose, insulting.
Definitely insulting. That's quite right. Yeah, Stefan?
And also because you ask for his parents why his dad was still alive. It's kind of like you did say, you're dead to me.
You're dead to me. Yeah. It's tantamount to saying, Dad, I would prefer that you were dead. That's in that, especially in that culture. Yeah.
As an extension of that, if you'd already asked for inheritance, there was always your father's like, well, will he ever come back? Is there any reason why son to come back?
Well, yeah, you may never see him again. That sense of really profound loss. Yeah. Anything else? Ethan?
The strife between the brothers. Obviously there must have been strife before he went away.
Oh, when your kids don't get on, that's very painful. Yeah, Danny.
One of the people that hurt him most is not knowing what's happened to his son, not knowing if he's dead or alive, and just the worry that every day he's going out of his mind.
Yeah, distant country. Does anybody know what that is kind of code for in this culture? Distant country? Exactly. Gentile lands. In other words, this is a Jewish boy going to Gentile lands where there may be no synagogue, certainly no temple. He's not planning to come back for festivals. He's effectively rejecting his God, as well as his father, everything around him. And farming pigs, not something you're going to do if you are a good Jewish lad. Okay. All right. Anything else? Yeah.
So as we were living yesterday, there was in that culture at the time, it was money was almost less important than honor.
Yes.
So for losing your son, you know, you're saying it's honorable, you brought the son to yourself. Shame. So,
huge deal. It's an honor shame culture. More important than the money. More important almost than anything else is the right people being honored, which is the older people. Mm-hmm. In that culture, as I get older, I like the sound of that culture more and more. I might move there. But that idea of the older you get, the more respect you get, and especially also in that culture where the father, if he's this wealthy, and he's clearly a very wealthy man with all the other things we see in the story, he would have had a key role in the community, the local village. He'd have been the person or one of the people they go to for problems in the village, solving issues to do with orphans, with people that are poor, this kind of thing. So he'd be very prominent. And this, of course, everybody would know what had happened. Right. Loses respect. Very, very painful. Okay. Let's now move the same question kind of to the second son. So another discussion for 5 minutes. What do you think hurt the father about the older son's behavior? What do you think hurt the dad about the older son's behavior? Okay, 5 minutes. Behavior. What do we think? What hurt him? At the back.
I think it's the fact that the father suddenly made aware that this older son is insecure, that this older son does not realize that the inheritance is everything in the home beyond for him. Just the realization. This boy is being a really warm, but doesn't realize what he thinks about other people.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about the insecurity angle. Yeah, he does display that. That's really interesting. Good. Okay, other thoughts? Yeah.
A lack of forgiveness.
Must have hurt his dad, because his dad does give forgiveness to the younger son, but the older son doesn't follow that. Must have hurt. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
At him and think maybe you don't know that you have a freedom rather than just a worker relationship with me, that you just work, or maybe you could probably take it apart anytime you wanted. If you're free to do that, even though it wasn't said, then maybe your father's thinking you should know that you're free to do that, but you don't think it's more of a contract.
So that idea that the relationship that the son thinks he has with the father is one like a contract. I must have hurt his dad. Good point, yeah.
The reaction of the son made the father, the penny dropped in the sense that what actually both important to him was in person. All the father, all the older son had to do is wait and be dutiful.
Yeah.
Even get the heart of the matter. So you need to squander and just take what he knew everything was coming to him. But he saw it just as a like, he saw it just in very clinical terms. It wasn't, you didn't really get the heart. You didn't really understand they have,
yeah,
to have to be younger brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
To him, it was the same. It was just about the inheritance.
Both of them, it's about the inheritance, which is a really interesting thought, because I wonder whether when he says to his dad, this son of yours, not my brother, you notice, right? This son of yours has squandered your property. Your property. Is he thinking about what he's supposed to be getting? No, not at all. Yeah.
No, I'm just wondering, on similar what was said there, and there would have been some hurt that, okay, his son felt that way, that. I wonder maybe actually would there have been passionately any reflection. Actually, my son doesn't feel that I appreciate him, that I haven't actually done those things, be more present and let him know now how much he's appreciated. And that it's something that's, as much as he's going to get all his inheritance, he doesn't feel that now in comparison to what I've done for the other son.
You would hope he would feel it, but he doesn't. Yeah, Akin.
Yeah, I've actually used to be fact. Your daughter is back. Yeah, amazing work. We use that term at a different time. But I was going to say, I think sudden realization for the dad that he, it's almost the message he's getting from his son is that actually, love the other child more than the other. He's more important, you know, he's your favorite. So, you know, and, you know, because of the way he teaches it, you know, it's come all the, everything that's in the house, you know, this guy comes from, you know, everything's going to do to. So I almost feel like he lost him more. That's the question. Yeah, he doesn't actually understand where his dad is coming
from. Right.
And that can be, I'm feeling your children feel like you favor one child over the other.
That's a really interesting point, because the father is not making a comparison between the two sons. He's actually being very generous to both of them in lots of different ways. But the son, the older son, sees it as he's doing a comparison, and he thinks he's coming out on the raw end of the deal. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Stefan.
Father must have been disappointed the older son didn't stand up. And he's like an athlete who's been off the ground. That's not right.
Good point. Yeah, maybe that's a good point. So the father might have thought the older son would say, no, that's not right, you know, and have a conviction about it. Anything else? Yeah. Must have hurt. Yeah. One more, if you like. Stefan and then Pat.
Well, I might be disappointed that the older son wants to care about his brother, was going to look for him and look and find him, and I was going to try to bring him back.
Man, he could have helped out. Good point.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, but he didn't go look for him, he didn't show him. Find out what happened to him.
He didn't, did he? A couple of connecting points between the younger son and the older son, and then we're going to have another brief discussion about the father in a moment. But you see, the community shame issue is there for both sons with the father. With the younger son, it's the wanting the inheritance and saying, I wish you were dead. Please, let's act as if you were dead. You are dead to me. and the whole community knowing that. But the older son is similar, although from a different perspective, which is, if you're the older son in that culture, it's your job to welcome all the guests to a party. It's a big house. It's a big spread out house. The dad, especially someone as wealthy as this and prominent in the culture, in the society, he'd have been inside on a big chair. Basically, he'd sit on something a bit like a throne, really. And his son would be at the door welcoming the guests and say, thank you for honoring my father's house. My father would love to see you. He'd be very grateful you're here. Please come and see him. He'd take the guest into his father's presence and say, Father, your neighbor so-and-so is here to see you. That's the role of the older son. But instead, where is he? Outside, moaning and complaining, refusing to go in. Which means, again, the whole community would know what he's doing. So this son has shamed his father just as much as the younger son. Shame in both those contexts. The younger son represents in many ways perhaps the history of Israel. A son to God as father who were rescued from Egypt and then wandered all over the desert, wishing they were back in Egypt, moaning about not having enough food and drink. And it was better in Egypt when we were slaves. And, oh, by the way, let's worship this calf because Moses has swanned off a mountain, supposedly talking to God, but we don't know where he's gone. So let's have a little golden calf and bow down and worship that. I mean, this is Israel's history, right? They even get into the promised land and then they say, well, we appreciate God. Let's have a temple or a tabernacle place for him, but let's have another altar to Asherah or Molech or one of these other gods, just in case, you know, because sometimes God doesn't seem to be paying enough attention. So let's have an extra god just in case. And they, of course, go into exile. And the older son is more, I think, connected in this context with the time of Jesus' day of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. I have a scripture here for you. Right. Jesus said this about the teachers of the law and the Pharisees. He calls them hypocrites. He says, you shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. It's a pretty serious accusation, to put it, Israel's religious leaders. You yourselves do not enter. He's saying you're not going to make it. You don't enter, nor will you let those enter who are trying. This is the older son not welcoming the younger son back, who wants to come back and be reconciled. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites, again, you travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you have succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are. Strong, huh? This is Jesus. It reminds you of Old Testament prophets, if you know your Old Testament. He's very concerned when people act like the older brother and do not welcome those who God, by his grace, wants to bring back into a reconciled relationship with him. All right, five more minutes for the last bit. What do we learn here about the heart of the Father? What do we learn about the heart of the Father? What do we think, everybody? What stands out? Anything that stands out? The heart of the Father. Akin.
Much better heart than mine. If that happened, the neighbors would be disciplining the son as he walks through the door. I mean, how dare you? Wasted all that money, you know, as woman left. And the society would think that's the right thing to do, right? So, now you might still work on him back later, but you have to make sure you understand very clearly how much it's worth. So he has an incredibly loving and patient heart. You know, same for the older son. You know, I thought that you could have gone to tell the older son, get the act together, mate. In the end, you have everything. But you know, the attitude in which he talks to his son is very different. He's very patient, very, very incredibly patient.
You're right, it's very countercultural. Yeah, Simone.
I think they have serious communication issues in this culture. You don't tell your older son that you appreciate what you are doing. I'm with the older son. Really? That's just me. unconditional love that the father clearly has for his sons, but then again, they have certainly communication issues. They certainly need somebody to mediate in this situation, and I think that will not be resolved.
Okay, thank you, Sarah.
I think when you look at it, he runs to both sons, because he runs to his son to meet him,
yes,
and he runs out to his son.
Yes.
Right.
He does. Yeah, he goes to meet them where they're at rather than getting them to shape up before he goes to be with them. Very good point. Yes? A heart that forgives. Yeah. Big heart. Yeah, Chris.
So the father provided for his son. You know, gave him fresh clothes and,
sandals, the robe,
the ring,
provides. Patricia.
I think it's a few of what Sarah just shared. I think the father was very humble. Apparently, it wasn't the business culture for a father to run to a son. It probably must be
a lot of humility. You don't run anywhere when you're a dad in that culture. The older you get, the slower you walk. And that's not because of arthritis. That's, or maybe it is, but that's the culture. You just walk slower and slower as you get older. You don't run anywhere. Yeah.
Some of that sort of the capacity for love is such that actually his father held that shame in the community with the younger son, and that shame that actually he feel at this moment, if his older son is not there, so it's like it's actually able to hold that and still actually be able to love you and not sort of take out whatever character or whatever I feel and just be so calm.
The way he's able to absorb that is quite something, isn't it? The emotional cost of that must have been very high.
It'd be nice to see 6 months down the line.
That's another parable which we haven't got. No. Maybe he told that one, it wasn't recorded. We don't know. Liesl.
So,
you
described how bold the father was.
Bold.
He didn't see the things that he used to say, but the way that the older brother, he's the time. Everything I have is yours. But just, that's a strong thing to say, but just the way he's done that, he's bold, but he's incredible love.
There's a tenderness and a boldness going in together here somewhere. He's not aggressive, but he's also not shying away from the facts and the truth. Yeah, really interesting. Yeah.
I just wonder if it's also a learning experience for the father. Because the father in the parable is compassionate, he's humble, he says the right things, but something's clearly gone on in the past where the brothers haven't got what he's trying to teach him what he needs. I'm not saying that, not like it's difficult to explain, but I just think when you look at the parallel relationship between father and Jesus, like Jesus is obedient, it's a perfect relationship. So although this father is impressive, it's obviously not a perfect relationship he has with his sons, otherwise he won't be in the position they're in together. And that's bringing out the human side of the father.
I think there's something there, and I think here's the thing that maybe we might build on with that, which is that in the same sense, though, God doesn't control his children.
No.
And so God can do, and I think this is part of the point of the parable, God can do everything right, but that does not guarantee anything regarding the response of humanity. You were going to say something, Lizzie?
I think the part of the potential, because the son, they got the son back, and the part of the other one came back, they couldn't possibly take the place really to show people the father and introduce them, because he didn't know.
Yeah, so the good question as to why he didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I think, like, just responding to what you're saying about how the father, like,
absorbed so much, and I was studying out like meekness yesterday, and I don't find meekness. It's like quiet, gentle, easy, and plays on submissive, and like that quality to look at the people who've hurt me, and I don't know, like still look at them lovingly, like take that in. I think even when the young son asked for his inheritance, he like submitted to that, he gave in to his request, and then where else am I going with this? I don't know. But yeah, I don't know.
But the meekness point is very important, because the gentleness and the willingness to forgive of the father does not indicate weakness. It's actually a deep strength that enables him to be able to be this gracious to these two sons who've dishonored him in such a way, but without being aggressive.
Yeah.
Somebody once said that meekness is best defined by saying somebody who's meek is someone who knows how to use a sword, but keeps it in its sheath. That's strength, right? You know, but they know how to use it, and you better be certain that they know how to use that sword, but they're going to keep it there and just be strong themselves. And something in there too. We better wrap up. Sorry, time is against us. I apologize for that, but we better do that. I think to wrap up before Steve's going to come and pray for us in a minute, before we take bread and wine, I think this is a great parable leading up to taking the Lord's Supper and thinking about what it cost God the Father to welcome us, all of us prodigal sons and older Pharisaical sons and, may I dare say, daughters, although I know all the women are much more pure-hearted than the men here. But nonetheless, there have been a few prodigal daughters, even some perhaps Pharisaical daughters, as well as sons, have been known. What we have here is an amazing picture of the heart of God that encompasses, if you like, all the extremes of human behavior, all the extremes of human response to him having provided in creation and all the wonderful things that we have in this world. Those who go down the path of the Pharisees, or those who go down the path of the prodigal running off to play with the pigs. Either way, he loves us all. We see a heart of love. Love expressed in his generosity, that he doesn't take offense, he's compassionate. You see how he's expressive with his energy and physically running to see his son. He's welcoming, forgiving, he's urgent, he's accepting, he celebrates with joy. He seeks out the older son, doesn't leave him out there. He listens, he reasons, he's reasonable, and he's reassuring to the older son, as well as to the younger son, by giving him the sandal, the robe, and the ring. He loves both sons. He loves the rebellious runaway, and he loves the rebellious resenter. And maybe that's one, maybe some of us here are more one than the other. Perhaps some of us more the rebellious runaway type. Perhaps some of us a bit more the rebellious resenter type. But God isn't comparing us and thinking one's better than the other or worse than the other. He is the one who loves us all equally. In this parable, the Father is referred to 11 times. I'd say it is more a parable about the Father than about either of the sons. I believe this is why Jesus told this amazing parable. The big question is perhaps not so much how we might respond to God's love, although that's true. But perhaps the big question is whether we will allow God to love us this way. It's humbling to let God love you with this kind of love and to accept the fact that God thinks you are worthy of that kind of love. He thinks that of you as your son, as his son or daughter. You are worthy of this love. And then there's joy that comes as a result. One writer about this parable said this: it is only when a penitent sinner is treated as a son that he has any hope of becoming one. I think that says something about our relationship with God, but I think it also says something about the way that we treat other people, that we welcome people into our lives who maybe have hurt us, who maybe have been rebellious, either by being a prodigal or being a runaway or being a resenter. The Pharisee and the prodigal need to be equally welcomed into our lives. Only if we treat them as a son or daughter do they have any hope of becoming a real son or daughter of God. It challenges the extent of our love. Perhaps you see yourself in the portrait of the younger son, perhaps more in the portrait of the older son. In either case, could we respond appropriately to the incredible love of Jesus, to the incredible love of the Father? In Ephesians 5, Paul writes this, follow God's example. I think he's referring there primarily to the Father God. Follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children. Walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us, gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and a sacrifice to God. As we take bread and wine now, we are celebrating the fact that God celebrates when we come back to him, and we're remembering what it cost. And it didn't cost a party. It didn't cost half the inheritance or something. It didn't cost a little bit of shame here or there on earth. It cost God the Father. It cost him his son so that we could become sons and daughters, entering into the same love that they share. So let's learn from the Father. Let's learn to be compassionate, to be forgiving and be generous, but let's also learn that we are fully, truly accepted and loved fully, wholeheartedly, no matter whether we're the rebellious runaway or the rebellious resenter. Steve, do you want to come up, please, and pray for us now and remind us of the cross, and then we'll take some bread and wine together.